Clara Schumann, the wife of the great composer Robert Schumann and a fantastically important pianist in her own right, wrote this in her diary on the 25th of May 1854. Liszt sent Robert today a sonata dedicated to him and several other things with a friendly letter to me. But the things are dreadful. Brahms played them for me and they made me utterly wretched. There is nothing but sheer racket. Not a single healthy idea, everything confused, no longer a clear harmonic sequence to be detected there. And now I have to thank him. It's really awful. Well, is it sheer racket? That's the question. This is Liszt's Piano Sonata in B minor. And as I mentioned, it's the subject of an essay for The Conversation by Zoltán Szabó. And Zoltán Szabó joins me now on today's music show. Welcome.
Thank you.
Now, it wasn't just Clara Schumann who hated the Liszt Sonata, was it?
No, not at all. Hans Lick, one of the most famous music reviewers of the day, also hated it, didn't think very highly of it. And of course, that was the time before recordings. So you heard a piece, and then chances were that you may not have heard it for another 20 years. So the opinion of the reviewer was extremely important. But Liszt was a fantastic stage personality, a fantastic composer. And the piece fortunately survived the negative comments of both Clara Schumann and Hans Lick and a few others.
Liszt actually composed this piece after he had sort of abandoned his rock star progress through Europe, giving concerts and seducing women right across the continent. This was after he settled down.
That is true, but the rock star fame helped him in his future endeavors and helped him to write pieces like the B minor sonata, also helped him to wealth, not very common for ordinary musicians at the time. So much so that a couple of decades later, he single-handedly offered Budapest, which did not have a tertiary institution of music, he offered that he would, out of his own money, build the first music academy in Hungary, which is still today is called the Liszt, Franz Liszt Music Academy.
Yes, yes. I must say, some years ago, I wrote a long article about Liszt for his anniversary, what would it have been, the 200th anniversary of his birth, I suppose. And I found that I liked him hugely. And it was partly because of these sorts of gestures and the work he did on behalf of other composers. And he was a great supporter of other composers. And the fact that he dedicated this sonata to Schumann is a sort of example of that. And Schumann, of course, had already dedicated his fantasy, his C major fantasy, to Liszt, which suggests that they were not at all at odds necessarily as far as artistic ideas were concerned. But Liszt and Clara are an interesting match, aren't they? Because they're the two famous concert pianists of their day. And between them, they sort of invented the piano recital.
Very much so. And of course, Schumann, by that time, he was getting very ill. In fact, he never heard the Liszt sonata in his life. Very soon, he had to go to a home of the mentally incapacitated. And Liszt became further and further to one side of classical music in Europe, whereas the other direction was Brahms. And in a couple of years later, the German musicologist Franz Brendel coined the term the new German school. And this is what Wagner and Liszt above all represented.
So they're considered progressive composers, whereas poor old Brahms is considered a conservative, which I never really believe.
Very much so. And yes, have we lived at the time, we would have been confused. But they were confusing times. And of course, it's very confusing in the case of Bruckner, who was a very conservative composer himself, but he follows Wagner enthusiastically, who belongs to the new German school.
There's also, there's a connection with the C major fantasy of Schumann in terms of the structure of this piece as well, isn't there? And also we could mention Schubert's Wanderer fantasy, that these are both big half-hour pieces, continuous pieces, and the Liszt sonata is that also. And yet it's not called a fantasy, it's called a sonata.
Exactly. So the Schubert Wanderer fantasy is a very good example. That's continuous, although there are separate movements in it. And the fascinating item about the Liszt sonata is that if you want, you can look at it as a gigantic sonata with all the recognizable features of a sonata form, but also you can consider it at the same time as four different individual movements which are being played nonstop together.
Yes, so it's got two structures superimposed on each other. Do you think that's what Liszt had in mind?
Who knows what Liszt had in mind? He was a genius. Yes, it's very interesting to think that when we analyze the compositions of Mozart, Haydn, Liszt, Wagner, did they know what they wrote? Mm. Very often, I suspect they may not have. They are just fantastic, brilliant minds.
Let's perhaps talk a little bit about the themes, and we can go back to the beginning of the sonata, because most of the information is there right at the beginning, that the thematic information that we're going to need to make sense of this half-hour musical journey. Perhaps you could tell us what the component parts are.
So it starts with almost like a slow introduction, starting on a very weird scale, which doesn't necessarily make sense for the 19th century listener. And that's the very first theme.
It doesn't actually make that much sense for the 21st century listener, it seems to me.
Yes, it's a modal scale, it's a Phrygian scale, which will be repeated a couple of bars later with a couple of notes altered. So it's not even keeping its original form genuinely. And then immediately afterwards, with the leaping octaves, we have the second main theme. And then very, very soon afterwards, we have that murmuring theme, starting with the very fast little triplet in the left hand, which is the third main theme. With these three main ideas, you can construct most of the sonata without much effort.
And although it's called Sonata in B minor and the key signature suggests it's in B minor, that scale that we hear at the beginning is actually G minor, which has a B flat in it.
Well, exactly. So it starts on a G. What's the relationship to B minor? Reassuringly, the very end of the sonata will turn into B minor. And Liszt is still thinking according traditional major and minor keys. However, he's more and more radical, and his late piano pieces, he leaves sometimes tonality altogether. Surprisingly.
Well, let's listen maybe to the first 3 or 4 minutes of this great sonata, the Sonata in B minor by Liszt, and it's played by Christian Zimmermann on this recording.
Thank you.
Christian Zimmermann playing the opening of Liszt's sonata in B minor. And we're talking about that piece on today's music show with the cellist and musicologist Zoltán Szabó from the Sydney Conservatorium of Music. Let's talk about the title of this piece. We've discussed the fact that it's a sonata in more ways than one. But it's interesting to me that given that it's from the pen of this most dramatic of composers in terms of his output at the keyboard, his pieces have evocative titles, and even the other pieces that he called sonata are the Dante sonata or the Petrarch sonata. But this is just sonata in B minor. Is it pure music as far as you're concerned, Zoltán?
Well, what is pure music that comes out from Liszt's pen? Programmatic music is becoming very important for him, and probably in the middle of the 19th century, for many composers, this becomes a lot more important than ever before. There is either literature or a historical event or a philosophical thought that very often influences what they write about. This goes back to as simple things as Beethoven's Eroica, which was written to celebrate Napoleon, only for Beethoven to tear off the front page and calling it Eroica once Napoleon crowned himself and thus lost the image of a democrat. And Liszt wrote, of course, all those symphonic poems, which all have stories to them. And even in the B minor sonata, many people, musicologists, suspected that there is a story behind it. People thought that it goes back to the Bible and there is a theme to Satan and there's a theme to Adam and Eve. People thought that it goes back to various other subjects. Liszt himself never talked about it. So we don't know if he wanted to do a program with this or not.
Even that theme we just heard, where those chords fan out, I must say, it always reminds me of the Dresden Amen, which turns up in Parsifal most famously, but is in Mendelssohn's Reformation Symphony, and Bruckner, of course, uses it a few times. I mean, it's not the Dresden Amen, but it has the same sort of, it's the same sort of gesture, and you would think that with a composer like Liszt, who, after all, took orders eventually and even took the tonsure, that wouldn't have been lost on him, the fact that it was like an amen.
Very possibly not. And it's interesting, that theme where we just left off, the D major theme, many people, including on this recording, Zimmermann, pianists often consider it as an almost sacred theme. Mm. Whereas some of the recordings describe this theme as something very tormented, very dramatic. And I was hit by that very strongly when I listened to various recordings, how this theme in particular provokes so many different responses.
Let's just listen one more time to the D major theme and see if you think that it's something which is sacred. Christian Zimmermann playing that D major theme. Is it like an amen from Liszt's B minor sonata? And I'm talking to Zoltán Szabó on today's show about the Liszt B minor sonata. He's written an article for The Conversation about it in a series that The Conversation is running on classical music. You've mentioned other pianists, and now we should talk perhaps about the way other pianists present this piece, because in spite of the fact that it got off to a very poor start with that rejection by Clara Schumann, it's been taken up by more and more players. And of course, it's a very difficult piece. It's a very virtuosic piece, which would have deterred players perhaps to start with. But now it's a sort of, you know, it's a kind of musical Everest. It's a piece that a lot of pianists feel they have to play. And as you suggested, they don't all play it the same way. There's some really striking differences just in terms of length.
Oh, absolutely. I was astonished by that when I did my research for this article. it is reasonably common for some performers to play it faster than others. And they can shave off 2, 3, 4 minutes of the usual duration of about 29, 30, 31 minutes. But then there is the phenomenal Croatian pianist, Ivo Pogorelic, who played it a lot and recorded it several times. And even his commercially available recording is a lot longer, over 30 minutes. And then a couple of years ago in Groningen in Holland, he played it in a concert, in a performance, which is twice the length of most other recordings. It's almost 50 minutes. Now, it is phenomenal. He's so idiosyncratic. It's almost like Glenn Gould used to be 40 years ago. But while with Gould, you can say, though this be madness, there is a system to it, as I think Polonius says in Hamlet. With Pogorelic, I'm not so sure. It can be very convincing at times, but at other times it's so slow that you can watch the grass grow while he's performing it.
Yes. Yes, that is, well, maybe we should have a little listen to Pogorelic. This is from a live performance in a rather boomy hall, I must say. Let's listen to Pogorelic. Well, yes, you can certainly see how it would be possible to conclude that that was more affectation than anything else. That's Ivo Pogorelic playing the Liszt B minor sonata in 2012 in a concert in Holland. You're listening to The Music Show, and I'm talking to the cellist and musicologist Zoltán Szabó about this extraordinary work. There is, of course, a school of pianism that comes from the composer himself, because Liszt was such a famous pianist and a pedagogue. He left behind him pupils, and the pupils taught pupils, and you actually get to Larry Sitsky eventually if you follow that chain. But how far back can we go? How close can we get to Liszt?
We can actually, luckily, go quite close to that, because two of his students, Arthur Friedman and Eugen d'Albert, recorded the sonata. They were Liszt students, but they recorded the sonata much, much later. However, I think it's fair to presume that they would have played the sonata for Liszt. They would have received his advice and ultimately, hopefully, his blessing. So the two recordings that we have by these two gentlemen are fascinating, because they give us certainly, definitely something from early 20th century performance practice, and also presumably some direct ideas from the composer himself.
And what sort of things do we hear? What do we learn about the music?
Well, we don't want to copy what they do, because it's a school passed a long time ago. But the way they take tempos, the way they break chords, the way they don't necessarily play the two hands together, the day they consider dynamics. They are fascinating, really interesting ideas. How long they take to perform the piece. Also, it might give us some idea how Liszt wanted this sonata to be heard, although we don't have direct evidence.
No. Now, what a pianist who I must confess I had not heard of until you mentioned his name was Georges Sebok. And he is the diametric opposite of Ivo Pogorelic, because he plays this piece, he dispatches it in about 24 minutes, doesn't he?
He does. Look, he is also descendant from Liszt via Bartók. He was Janos Starker's colleague and friend in Bloomington, Indiana. But like Starker, he also migrated from his native Hungary. And he was a phenomenal musician. I think the first notable performance of this sonata I heard from him many, many years ago when he taught it in a masterclass, and then he performed it the same evening himself. There was an incredible peace to the man. He was a very well-settled musician. He had incredibly strong musical ideas. But when he was teaching, he was sitting there, a very short man. He had a slight deformation in his back, so he almost looked like a hunchback. Chain-smoked, even during classes, those were the days. And he came up with the most wonderful ideas about the sonata. And when you listen to it in his performance, you certainly have one of the most adequate performances of this work.
Well, we love adequate on the music show, so let's go out with Sebok. Thank you very much indeed, Zoltán. It's been very good to meet you and to talk about Liszt's B minor sonata.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.